We know hunting for good coffee can be frustrating and time-consuming. And with all the confusing labels out there, it's hard to know that what you are buying is actually mindfully sourced and truly making a difference in people's lives. That's why we put together our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription. Over the last 15 years, Joe Bean Coffee has built friendships with award-winning coffee farmers, ones we trust to consistently bring us amazing coffee year after year. Coffee tastes best at the peak of harvest, which is why we run our program like a CSA, regularly sending you a rotating selection of in-season coffee. You pick how many bags and how often you need it. We do the rest. And you can feel good knowing you're directly supporting small-scale coffee farmers. Go to JoeBeanRoasters.com for details.
I used a sound on InShot labeled eagle, but it was actually a hawk, and so the birding community came for me. And was like, that's not an eagle.
I never would have known.
Don't mess with the birder community. They're serious.
Hello, and welcome to It's a Lot, a podcast about things that are a lot. Our conversations focus on social media and parenthood as well. They're complex topics, and they take up a lot of space in my life and many of yours, too. Social media especially is a lot, especially when you work in the field too, and when you are using it personally like we all do. So we're gonna dive deep on social media today, and I'm really excited to be talking to Jackie Ortiz. Jackie Ortiz uses she, they pronouns, and she is a creative marketer, content creator, and artist based in Los Angeles, and sometimes a DIY camper van parked somewhere with Signal. With over 15K on TikTok, they move between travel, music, and storytelling that hopefully doesn't try too hard. If you love learning from Jackie today, give them a follow at Other Jackie O on TikTok or Instagram. I'm sure you'll eat her content right up. I'm your host, Emily Hesney Lynch, and I'm so excited to dive into this conversation today. Jackie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be chatting today.
Me too. I think we first connected through a Twitter chat or something like that many years ago. So we've both been in social for a long time. How'd you get your start in social media as a career?
Wow. I want to say that my beginnings in social stemmed far beyond like when my actual career got started. So prior to moving to California, I was a musician in Chicago. I was also working in market research, but that's like the boring part. And I think when you are an artist of like any medium, really, marketing and specifically social for me, it kind of lends itself well, it's a blessing and a curse, for better or for worse, with marketing yourself and putting yourself out there. So I think that's where I really got started. It wasn't until I moved to California in 2014 and started working at a school. I came here without a job, and I started teaching at a school teaching music. And the school that I worked at actually needed someone to help drive enrollment and help manage their social accounts. So that's really kind of how I fell into it. It married both of my loves of art and social media together, and creativity and social together. And that's really where I got my start.
I feel like that's so common that a lot of us fall into these social jobs accidentally, especially in those early days when it was still so new back then.
Oh, yeah.
Has it changed a lot? I mean, I know it has, but what changes have you seen in the years since you first dove into it as a profession?
I feel like it changes every day at this point. But when I first got started, I feel like it was, you couldn't even post any video on Instagram. And I think the way that things are consumed are completely different. It was just a really big shift. I think every day is like a new challenge in some ways in social, and especially now with everything going on in the world and algorithms and big tech. I feel like there's so much to juggle in social, but I think that's sometimes the beauty of being in this field is that it always keeps you on your toes, and that you're always in this sometimes sinking boat together with other folks as well.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that. What are some of the challenges you're feeling lately working in social?
I think it, with the news cycle and with just living in America in this time and place, what a time to be alive. And I think a lot of people are using social for many different reasons, and not a lot of people are digesting information, I think, in the same way. Some people are just turned off by social media as a whole. It's like becoming more and more, I think, polarizing, I think, as the news cycle wears on people. So that's been the main challenge, is really still feeling relevant and also still feeling like you can move people and connect people together through social. I feel like that's my biggest challenge in work and in life.
Yeah, these days, at least personally, when I get on Instagram, half the time I'm like, what am I doing here? Am I here for the memes? Am I here to find out like the pizza special at the place down the road? Or am I here for work? Or like, you can't even remember what you're doing because it's so many different purposes in one place.
It all just blends together. It's a blur these days.
Do you have like a favorite platform personally or professionally right now?
You know, I've been really on YouTube just watching nothing related to work, mostly on podcast videos, a lot of podcast videos, a lot of stand-up comedians, which I don't usually typically like stand-up comedy, but comedians that start podcasts for some reason are kind of showing up more in my feed.
Are there any I should check out? Because I don't listen to any comedians' podcasts right now.
Oh, I have been watching Rick Glassman, like my hyperfixation person at the moment. I think he just blends. His videos are interesting because they're podcasts, standard podcasts, but he puts a lot of animation in them that is really surprising. And he's just overall kind of a funny improviser. And that's who I've been watching kind of religiously. It's been a nice little comfort corner on the internet.
That sounds really fun. Yeah, I'll have to check out their stuff. So your social career has spanned a lot of different kinds of companies. I know you used to do it for a theater, and then you were at Doist and Blurb, and now you're at a genetic testing company. So how did you adapt to all those different industries and environments as you went along?
The through line, the thing that I had to remember that drew me to each one of those industries was the opportunity for storytelling. The ability to kind of make an impact on someone's life, I think, was huge for all of those industries. They're vastly different. And I think the largest challenge working at the company that I work at now is that it's the first company that I worked at that doesn't have like end-to-end, like a purchase conversion. For instance, with the theater, it's like there's always a ticket sale. With Doist, the end user was purchasing the app. And with Blurb, they had to purchase a book. With this, the doctor has to order the test. So it's a little bit different how we tell stories on social and how we try to communicate with folks. But overall, I think my adaptability with these different industries has really just been that through line of like, how can we change people's lives either through this product or through the stories that we tell on social?
Yeah, very cool. I know you do a lot of storytelling with your own personal content too. So we'll talk about that as well, but I'm curious, with not selling a product at the end of the day to a consumer who like clicks to buy at this genetics company, what are some of your goals when you're doing that kind of marketing?
It's really just to create rapport and like one-to-one relationships. Like my goal at the end of the day, as specifically an organic social marketer, is how many conversations can we have? How many doors can we kick open to conversation? If somebody leaves a reply, how are we responding to those things to continue a conversation versus just saying, hey, we see your comment, thank you for commenting. It's how do we continue that conversation and really put not only our names in the ears of these people, but also really get to know them as parents on a diagnostic odyssey or just as people who are following our brand on social.
I'm hearing that more and more, that like communities and those one-to-one relationships are so important, especially with AI. Like AI can start creating content for us and automate a lot of things, but the one-to-one and the human aspect of it is so important. And I don't want us to like forget that.
No, I think it's a large part of why social is such a beautiful thing too. I think we met, you and I probably met during COVID or like virtually. And those digital spaces, I think, you know, with the way of the world still, are very important for us to have. And even as operating as a brand, we see that community is just such a huge part of how we operate.
What kind of stories do you try to tell for that community to engage them?
We really are trying to hit the heartstrings of like parents that are searching for answers, because we know how frustrating it can be. The suck of the diagnostic odyssey is a huge one. Like a lot of these families are waiting for answers for more than 6 years. Oof. Or they have really sick kids in the NICU who are just waiting for these tests to come in. And understanding that that's a journey that they're going through, knowing that we see them and we hear them, I think is like a main story and a main driver of our storytelling at the moment. And really kind of like the impetus of like why we do anything on our social at this point. It's why we're there, is to really help cultivate this community and make people feel seen and heard.
That's so brutal to hear. 6 years. Wow. I told you a little bit about my son's diagnosis, and we got that when he was only 5 days old. So it's a completely different timeline. And I'm so grateful we didn't have to wait 6 years. I can't even imagine.
A lot of kids too, it's like they don't know until symptoms show up, mm-hmm. or it's just a longer journey of finding the right test, finding the right people, the right doctors to advocate for the tests. It's a long, winding thing. And we, at least at this company, want to make sure that people feel like they have resources and people to lean on.
So are you getting those stories directly from customers a lot of the time, or how are you like sourcing the stories that you tell?
A lot of it is like directly through customers. Some of them are through people that just we find on social, they tag us in something, or a lot of parents in the rare disease community start their own foundation. So it's kind of like this ripple of impact that happens once they get a diagnosis, that is they want to continue advocating for the rare disease that their kid has. So they often start foundations or that they want to amplify. So sometimes they tag us in those things, and that's a lot of times how we also find stories to collaborate on with folks.
That totally makes sense. This is such a different world from the content you create for fun. Was that intentional in your career to do something to kind of balance it out? Or were you like accidentally stumbling in this scientific direction?
I was definitely an accidental stumble. Yeah. I was, you know, looking for my next step in my career. This job is offering me to move into a title of like social strategist. Of course, that involves me as a one-man band still executing and publishing and doing all the things. However, it's really allowing me to own the social strategy in and of itself. That's kind of how I fell into this. I was honestly not expecting to hear back from this company at all, but they've been very open in trying to really hire folks that are outside of healthcare to give a breath of fresh air, and also to make like complicated science, people who also don't really like, aren't like super into the science, try to explain those to folks who are also on this journey who are not scientists and advocate for their kids that way. But it was definitely not intentional. I think when it comes down to it with my career and social, try to follow missions or things that feel like they're making the world a bit of a better place or making an impact on people's lives. I think that's what I follow most throughout my career. It's like the through line of that.
That's so cool. I love that you're doing that. I'm curious how you break down those complex concepts. Like, it's very cool that they brought in someone who's not already familiar with it, because I'm sure that helps and you totally are a breath of fresh air. So how do you approach it when you don't really understand the topic yourself to begin with and you have to make content about it?
I feel like a lot of everything that I've done so far, it's collaboration. And at this company specifically, I feel like I have a lot of support from folks within the company that are connected to the science. Like, I feel like the main person I work with, she's a genetic counselor by trade, but her role in the company is actually translational science, which basically means like translating the science into something that is digestible, and also making sure that we're not making claims that we shouldn't be making as a healthcare company. And so it's a bit of that, but really just leaning on other folks in the company for support has been super helpful for me, where I have an idea and, you know, sometimes it's a silly little meme, sometimes it's a video, but really being able to collaborate with the experts in the company to make sure that A, it makes sense, but it's still medically accurate. And having genetic counselors specifically who are trained to explain these genetic concepts to families daily, having someone like that on working closely with the social team has been super awesome and helpful.
Yeah, that's great to have an expert like that who can help. Have you ever pitched them an idea that's like a trend or a meme or something, and they're like, absolutely not?
I think it took a lot of convincing, a lot of the direction that we want to do, because we really want to just get in front of new eyes or engage with folks in a different way than the company has been previously. And I feel like with every company I've been at for social so far, it's like I become the initial face of that content, because I just so happen to also be a content creator outside of work, but also because I offer myself up sometimes as a sacrificial lamb to be like proof of concept. Look how cool this was. Look how well this did. Don't you want to tap in or tag in for the next one? that requires like a scientist to speak on this versus me just, you know, yapping on about a concept. And that's been really helpful. A lot of it has been really just trying to get things off the ground and hopefully have people kind of like rise with us.
Have you asked for extra compensation or anything like that when you're in a job where you have to be the face of the company and all the content?
I haven't, but I should. I feel like more so now too that the actual creation of the content takes a lot more of my time than the actual social strategy and being in social when you're wearing like 1,000 different hats, mm-hmm. knowing that when you're creating content, it is taking away from something, one of your other hats. So
yeah,
I haven't yet, but I plan to. I think it's one of the many things that I think working in social, we're all trying to untangle is this job soup that everyone has kind of come across as the years go on.
I always think about that too when someone ends up being the face of the brand and all the social content, because if there's any kind of scandal with that company, then your face is attached to it forever and you just like lent your reputation to them. It's crazy.
Yeah.
They ask huge. So much of us and no one thinks about that really.
Very true, yeah.
But it sounds like you're in a good place right now with a good team and they're jumping into some videos and stuff too.
I think so, yeah. I've been able to tag a lot of people in and also really just pull back the curtain and show folks that like we are a genetic testing company, but we're also people mm-hmm. and we're not all robots. There are some robots involved, but
yeah.
A lot of it is just to expedite the process.
Are there any particular types of posts that you're finding perform really well these days?
Oof. It's hard to say. I think we're still developing our audience, but in general, I think people are just craving like human faces. I think beyond like the memes and beyond the designed carousels, I think those are a little bit past. I think people just really want raw, real photos. I've been seeing a lot on Instagram of like text on, they have that where you can basically put text on an image and that's been doing well for some brands. For us specifically though, the more human we can get, the more people in front of the camera, the more real photos, real stories we can do. Those have been the most impactful.
And are you guys a fully remote company?
Yeah. There are physical labs. So we mm-hmm. do have like lab technicians in Gaithersburg, Maryland, and Iceland, and
wow.
in Connecticut. But outside of that, the marketing team and a lot of the commercial team are fully remote.
So is it hard to pull people together for content when everyone's remote, or how do you handle that?
It makes it a little bit trickier and really getting really realistic about timelines, especially when it comes to remote environments where, you know, you have multiple hurdles of approvals, but also you have multiple hurdles of, you know, folks being on different time zones or just on the other side of the world and not necessarily knowing how to record and trying to figure out how to be with them remotely to make sure that you're getting the content you need and they also feel comfortable. There's a lot of like tricky things, but I think as long as I've been able to stay like realistic with the timeline of like, I know that it sounds like it's just a 30-second video, but in reality, all of these steps need to fall into place for us to actually make a content that's valuable and worth publishing. It's been a challenge, but a good one, I think.
It sounds like you've started to get people on the same page and got everyone working together.
Something that I was a little worried about hopping into my first healthcare role, because I was worried that there's going to be so much bureaucracy, but I do feel like that this company has been very open to experimenting with things, especially on social and really viewing social as like the playground of content. Like it is a place for us to develop ideas and to really see what people are latching onto. And that's been really helpful throughout this. So
I love that like playground of content image. I wish more people approached it that way, because a lot of people are like, here's the formula, I'm sticking to it. Or they're just so like rigid in how they approach it. So it's good to remember to have fun with it.
It's been really fun. Surprisingly fun, I think, for the topic of what I'm marketing on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
But also the stories that we're telling, sometimes they're not always super happy, mm-hmm. but just really figuring out what resonates with people and how we can build those relationships has been a fun process.
We've touched a little bit on how a lot of these things in social, like video production, takes a lot more time than people expect. Are there other misconceptions about social media, like that you want to break down, myths you want to bust?
I feel like it comes down to resources. I feel like social as an industry has turned in some ways where some teams are getting more resourced or properly resourced. And I still think the thing that we are trying to debunk as folks that have been in this world for so long is that most teams are still not resourced or are not viewed as, you know, a very important integral part of the marketing team as like the digital face of your company. And also that, you know, social media managers and content creators are the same, to your point earlier. And also that there's like so many roles that can live under an umbrella in social, and not all social media managers have the same expertise. Like, I just so happen to be a content creator. I just so happen to love making videos, but someone else can come in and not have that experience. They could be good at something completely different. Influencer marketing, which is also its own little bucket. I feel like resources and trying to delineate specificity in the role itself.
Yeah, and graphic design gets thrown in there for so many of us, and I'm not a designer, and I can like mess around in Canva or Adobe Express, but that's about it. It's not true design.
Right, very true. Yeah.
How do you define content creator? Because I know a lot of people use that term in different ways, and I know like how I think of it, but what's your definition?
I think someone who is willing to be like the face of something and is telling stories, creating either video or stills content and overseeing, I guess they have their own voice, I think is a huge part of being a content creator, lending their own voice to the content they create.
How much of your own voice are you incorporating at your current employer?
Currently, I feel like it's a lot of it. The way that I edit is very similar to probably how I edit my personal content. However, I feel like the topic is very different, but I think majority of the videos that I'd be creating with my face in front of it, at least, is very true to me, and I guess very aligned with all the other content I've been creating elsewhere on the internet.
I know when you're creating that much content, there can be a lot of burnout that starts to set in. So have you been experiencing any of that, or how do you fight it before it hits?
Definitely. I think since November of last year, just when everything started to really kick up and ramp up, I was making videos, travel videos, and posting them, food and travel videos, every week, usually 1-2 videos a week. And ever since like the fall of last year, I've just been trying to reevaluate how much pressure I'm applying to myself as a creator, and how to balance that with the work that I do, because I do enjoy it. I think the personal content that I create is kind of a respite for me. It's been a way for me to dig myself out of burnout in a lot of ways. But at the same time, you know, really not putting so much pressure on myself that I'm like, I haven't posted a video this week on my personal page, I'm a failure. You know, that I think can really dig myself back into that hole. So it's a very delicate balance. But I've really found finding community, either IRL or online, has been really helpful to kind of push me out of burnout. Just knowing that humanity exists and having people to chat with, to have dinner with, something that's completely not related to social and also not related to being online has been nice.
The IRL community is so nice to have, or even just like the one-on-one conversations. I'm curious, what is energizing you and making you want to stay in social even on the days when it's hard or when you feel burned out?
I feel like it's that whole thing of community. I think there's so much power in digital spaces. And I feel like that's the thing that really keeps me going at the end of the day. Like I had mentioned earlier, I was a musician. I still am a musician. I feel like I'm trying to own that a little bit more. But I found the producer of my last two tracks through a Twitch community, actually. So there's just so much power in online spaces. Someone that I just would have never known existed if it weren't for a Twitch streamer. And I feel like those are the kinds of like relationships that I seek. I want other people to find through the brands that I work with. And I feel like that's what revitalizes my spirit when I'm feeling icky about the world or about social or about algorithms or about the people in charge of the technology that we use, you know.
It's hard to like feel much hope when the corporate overlords are so evil, you know, but then I'm talking to other moms in a Facebook group who are like really cool or encouraging or sharing funny stories. And like those small communities do really like make a difference in the day-to-day stuff.
Definitely.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about community and all the fun stuff you're doing on your personal TikTok after a short break. I'm excited to chat more about that.
Are you interested in things? Especially how they would be ranked by siblings, just looking for a reason to lovingly eviscerate each other? Then we've got the show for you. Murphy's Rank the World. A podcast where three siblings find a way to fight while comparing relatively milquetoast objects. Like, what is the best sandwich or who is the best Muppet? You know, good family fun, but probably with a few swears. If that sounds like a good time to you, find us now on the Lunchador Podcast Network.
Hello, Rochester. This is Richard B. Colon.
And Quanti Donnell.
We are the curators of the Behind the Glass Gallery, where we host monthly receptions on First Friday, showcasing three underrepresented artists from the Rochester area.
And on this podcast network, you can listen to us speak to these monthly artists to get another lens on their medium and how they contribute amazing things to the Rochester arts community.
Catch us at 240 East Main Street every First Friday and
on the Lunchador Podcast Network.
So Jackie, I've really enjoyed watching your TikTok over the last few years. I'm curious how you got started with that and if it was something you just started doing for fun or if you had any goals in mind when you started it.
I started it on a whim. I wasn't sure what I was going to do with it. All I knew was that I was traveling a lot of different places. We had a DIY camper van that we built out during the pandemic and we were beginning to travel. And the places that we were visiting, I was like, wow, I just never knew that this existed. You know, seeing the world in a different way while you're on the road was very, like, pivotal for me. And I was honestly really burnt out on social for work and trying to figure out ways to love it again. And part of it was also that where I wanted to create for myself and really just have no boundaries and not give a hoot. I guess. I don't want to swear. not give a hoot about how it does or how many people engage with it. And that's kind of how it began. And it kind of has had a life of its own. So it's been really fun.
It's so nice sometimes when you're in social to still make social content, but just for funsies. Like, it's hard to do it these days. I make content for TikTok sometimes too, but not haven't amassed a following like you have, but it is fun to just like put yourself out there and share little stories or just do whatever you want without worrying about likes or anything like that.
Your content I really love. I loved your TikTok bio specifically because of, I think it says like no niche or something. And I was like, I love that. I just love that you don't have like a specific thing that you're just kind of flying by the seat of your pants.
I have such a hard time limiting myself. I'm just like, I'm going to do whatever I want. I've made like a few videos about like being a parent and like having a baby, but not a ton. But people just kind of roll with whatever I start making content about. So it's nice.
That's awesome. It looks very freeing. And I was like, I love that. I love seeing all the stuff that you've created.
Yeah, it's a good time. With your Slapper Tourist Trap series, how did that start? Did you have like the name first? Or I want to hear like the whole origin story.
We were visiting, so a lot of the places that we visit while we're on the road are like kind of underground places. I think I'm the research friend, but also the friend that people are like, I'm visiting this city, where should I go? And usually it's something that you might see on like Atlas Obscura, like somewhat like very obscure travel destination or spot. And there were still moments where we would visit a tourist destination. I was like kind of wondering how I would go about creating content for that. And I was like, let me try something different. So that's when Slapper Tourist Trap was born. And it kind of hit this sweet spot of with digital spaces where people just have opinions and they love to talk about themselves, which I feel like, you know, any person that works in social has learned throughout their careers is people love the opportunity to talk about themselves or their own experience. And I feel like with Slapper Tourist Trap, the reason why it was so successful or has been so successful is because if someone has visited one of those tourist traps, they have something to say. And if they haven't, if it was never on the radar or it's been on their bucket list, they have something to say as well. So there's always like on both ends of that spectrum reason to engage with the content in some way, shape, or form. And
people have really been vocal in on those videos specifically, in good ways and bad, but it's been really fun to kind of just see how it does and see some interesting places in the process.
Those videos are super shareable too. I'm sure that helps them get around, you know, because everyone will send it to a friend and be like, oh my God, I want to go here. Like, this place looks awful, you know?
And also, it's really activated like different parts of the internet. Like, I think my most viral video, I guess, is the one where I do Slabberator Strap at Dollywood. And there was a point in the video where I was talking about American Eagles. You can see them there. And I used a sound on InShot that was labeled eagle, but it was actually a hawk. And so the birding community came for me and was like, that's not an eagle. And I was like, I'm sorry, it wasn't me. But yeah, just seeing the little factions of the internet kind of take that video in different ways has been really fascinating for me.
That's too funny. I just watched that one last night, actually, and I like laughed at the eagle sound effect. I never would have known.
Don't mess with the birder community. They're serious.
Which of the videos have been like the most or least popular? Is there like one tourist trap that everyone hates?
I don't know if there's one that people hate necessarily. I think there's some that people just, it is not on the radar and it never will be. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Calico Ghost Town, which is a ghost town in northern, or is it northern? One of the directions, north, south, east, or west of LA. I thought that video was going to do really well, and it actually didn't do well at all. Mm. But I think it was mostly because people are just like, I don't really care.
Yeah, got to tap into those hot takes. So did you have any like formal training in video editing before you started making this series?
No, I just really enjoy the video editing process. I feel like I've come to love it. I've always loved it. My friends have always called me like the documentarian of our group. So I'm always filming things and editing things together just for funsies. And it's something that I want to get better at. Like, I think it's on my bucket list to make a documentary. I have no idea what that entails at this point in time or how to even go about that, but I'll figure it out at some point. But that's kind of where I'm at with my video editing skills is like, I think it's fun so far and it's not been daunting. But everything I've learned from the internet.
Are there any particular tools or resources that were really helpful when you were diving in and learning how to do this?
I follow this creator, Holly, on Instagram and YouTube a lot. And she's a filmmaker, but she makes a lot of just very super helpful videos about editing, about color grading. And that's been really helpful, not only just to keep my interest in editing itself, but also just sparking my interest in trying something new with my videos or maybe trying color differently or sound, different settings on my devices and all that stuff. So that's been really helpful.
I always find it so intimidating to do like much editing at all with videos. You know, I can put in my closed captions or add like a little pop-up image or whatever, but I don't do much more than that. So do you have tips for people who are beginners at video content creation?
A lot of things that I've been able to do is because that willingness to just take the leap and start. I feel like a lot of people just, they get paralyzed by the fear of making something bad. And I think the truth is that the first thing that you make doing something new is probably not going to be that great, but you have to start at some point just to get better at it. So I think it's really overcoming that fear and just starting. And it doesn't have to be a huge endeavor at first. It can be a short video. It can be like a 3-second video. It could be a 10-second video. If you want to get better at it, I think you just have to start.
Starting is scary. Putting yourself out there is scary, but like you're never going to get anywhere if you don't try. It sounds so cheesy, but it's very true.
Oh, I was like, how do I make that sound? I don't know how to make that sound cool, but it really is. Just taking the leap is huge.
Totally. Do you remember like the first video you published on the account when you took the leap to start posting?
I'm pretty sure on TikTok, it wasn't even food related. I think I was just trying to figure out TikTok. It was a video of me doing a kick line, you know, like the Rockettes do, but with like a turkey. and it, because it was like one of the filters they had, that was my first video. Not good. Probably made on my cracked iPhone at the time. And,
yeah.
But just kind of a way to interact with this new platform. It was new at the time. That was my first TikTok.
I just like stitched together pictures of my dogs or something and added music. And I was like, yeah, I made a TikTok.
Great. Yeah. Post it.
Yeah. When you're making content for the Slap or Tourist Trap series or any of your other like food content, do you use the feedback from the audience a lot to choose the direction you're going, or do you just kind of go off and do whatever you want regardless of what you think they want to see?
You know, if they have good suggestions, sometimes they've had really great suggestions all around the road of like, try this place, or, oh, you should check out this town since you're heading that way. And that's been really helpful. But I think my main reason for starting the channel was to create for myself and not have it be driven by anyone. And I think I told myself when I first started making the videos and when I started taking off that if I start to create for people are based solely based off suggestion, I have missed the mark. And what I mean by that is that like sometimes they would suggest like an amusement park that's like in Ohio. And I'm like, I'm not going to go out of my way to go to Ohio. Like I love amusement parks, certain ones, but I'm not a roller coaster person. There's other people on the internet that love them, that will ride 16 coasters a day. And I'm just like not that person. And I don't feel like I will enjoy making the content or like that people will enjoy consuming that content because it'll be obvious that I'm not super into it. Really trying to always, you know, for me to see their suggestions, but also I think listen to my own intuition of what I really want to make and why I started this in the first place.
That's smart to pay attention to your intuition. Like it sounds, again, kind of cheesy, but it's important to do that. And it's easy to get swept away by like likes or follows or comments or whatever.
I think I just don't think I'll be flying somewhere just to go see an amusement park. I think if it happens to be on the way to something, like maybe we'll drive off course for it. But part of me is just like, I don't want to become an amusement park account. I'm not that. And I don't tend to be. And I think people will be very disappointed in that content if I started to create for the amusement park community.
Totally valid. I know there's like so much buzz about being authentic lately, and that's been around for years. But do you do anything in particular to try to stay authentic when you're making these videos?
I feel like I always think about like the influencer cadence of voiceover. I do a lot of the voiceover stuff. So it's been like, if I am doing a voiceover for a video, I was like, I always try to triple check myself. And I'm like, does this sound like me? Or am I like falling into that cadence? I'm like, want to make sure that it sounds true to how I speak and not necessarily how the internet speaks. I feel like they're going to do studies of us. Like I'm pretty sure people already are doing studies about influencer, like etymology of like the influencer accent and all that. I feel like that's already happening.
The millennial pause.
100%. And I definitely want to be true to how I sound and how I speak and how that is shown on the content that I create.
When you're doing voiceovers like that, do you tend to write a script down before you start, or do you just totally wing it?
I wing it. It's based off the clip. Sometimes I fumble my words. I tend to ramble. So I will write something out, like just so that I can get the words right and out of my mouth in the correct order. Because sometimes I sound like, blah, 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 like for half of the video takes. And I'm just like, this is a lot. I don't write it beforehand. I feel like that would overwhelm me. So I'm writing it as I go. And as I edit has been helpful.
That's usually what I do when I'm making, like, I do voiceovers for graphic novels or things like that I read, and I show the pictures from the book, but I usually end up kind of rambling. Then I'm like, oh, I went too long and the clips ran out, and then I just restart and hope for the best. Keeps it authentic, I guess.
Yeah.
And I don't want to like try too hard or put too much effort in when it's just for funsies for myself.
Right. After like the fifth take, I'm usually like, what? Where am I going with this? What happened to me? Why am I doing this?
Do you have any goals with the account now that it's been doing so well?
I feel like it's that same thing of like, I want people to be curious. I want to create community. And I feel like curiosity and community are two main drivers for why I make content and I guess why I'm also staying in social. I want people to remain curious about the places that they visit, the places that they live. Because oftentimes, you know, I'm originally from Chicago, and every time I go back to Chicago, I've really been trying to take the time to see it in a different way that maybe I haven't when I was growing up. So seeing different parks and like taking that walk around the lake that I really took for granted back in the day, really just remaining curious about places that we travel to and visit and the places that we live has been my main goal for the channel. And I hope to continue to do that with the content that I create in the future.
I love that. I feel like we could all use more curiosity in our lives. Like having a baby at home, he's so curious about the whole world. Every single thing is just fascinating to him. And you don't remember to be like that every day when you move through the world.
Definitely. And I feel like it's also like trying to be present too in some ways. And I think that sounds contradictory as a content creator sometimes. But I think if I'm taking the time to make the video and if that allows people to be more present and more curious about their surroundings or the places that they visit, I think I will be very happy.
I always feel a little bad for like having my phone out taking videos of my baby, but I try to get like the one video or the one picture and then set it down. So a little bit of presence, but also documenting for future is always nice.
I feel like a little goes a long way. I feel like also there's a lot to being a person who likes to document things. I think they're needed.
There's value to it. Do you think you'll monetize the account ever in the future, or have you tried to do so already?
I haven't tried to monetize it. I've done some paid partnerships on the account, and that's been kind of fun if they're products that I enjoy and use while we travel specifically. I don't want to just promote something that I don't really engage with on the daily. I haven't really thought about it. I think I'm still just rolling on hopefully creating more community, and if something happens where I can monetize it in ways that feel genuine to me and the content that I create, then I'll go for that, but haven't really thought about it yet.
It's nice to keep it kind of low pressure.
Yeah.
What have you learned from the personal content creation you're doing that applies to the content you make for work?
I think it's experimentation, and also that people are craving connection. So that carry through has been super helpful. Just seeing how people engage with the content, and then also seeing in real time what is shareable. Of course, it's like for specific audiences, but really just knowing that it works, I feel like. Because I think when you're working for a company and they have many different goals that you're trying to meet as the social team or the social person, it can get really daunting and overwhelming. But I feel like just knowing that, you know, somewhere out there, my personal account is great. So something works and it's worth pursuing and it's worth experimenting and trying new things for, because once you actually hit that groove, it changes everything.
That is so true. And I'm glad you're reminding people to just experiment and be curious, care about their communities, because so many brands just want to be like, I'm a megaphone. I'm going to blast out my message on social media. I want people to do my thing, buy my stuff. And it's boring. Like being that promotional is not going to hook anyone. Like no one cares if you're just yelling into the void.
I also feel like I'm like, people don't want to be advertised to all the time. I feel like TikTok's so interesting because it's like every other TikTok now is like trying to sell me a creator trying to sell me something.
Yeah.
And it works a lot of the time.
Same. Yeah.
But I feel like, you know, as a company, it's like people still want to hear stories. They don't necessarily want to be sold to all the time when they're scrolling at 2 a.m. looking for answers for their sick kid, or if they're just like over everything and all they want to do is ha-ha at something. You know, it's a huge thing to just approach social as a human, even when you're working or being a voice of a brand.
Ironically, I just bought Greek breakfast biscuits off of TikTok shop because it was a storytelling ad that was so focused on like the family and the recipes and the factories, and like it showed all these lovely images, and then they had delicious flavors, and I was like, oh, okay, sell to me, sure, with this beautiful story, I'll do it.
Add to cart.
TikTok shop is dangerous.
So dangerous. I've bought so many random things. My husband's like, what is this? He just keeps, he always comes to my desk at the same time every day and is just like, your package.
I'm still resisting the bikinis they're trying to sell me because I don't need a bikini right now. In Rochester, New York in April, no.
There was a video that worked on me it was that same video creator, but she was like, you don't need any more accessories for your camera. You don't. As a content creator, and then it was talking about the specific tripod and how it fits in her purse. And I was like, if it fits in my purse, I'm going to want to get it. Like it's just the end. So.
Yeah. That's a fun way to frame it too. You don't need this, but what's like the most random thing you've bought off TikTok shop?
Ooh, socks. I bought socks.
Not the most exciting, but still random.
Not exciting at all. Good socks. I use them. I still use them. They've held up. I thought they were going to be like come in and be like napkins on my feet, but they're pretty good quality. I was like, okay, TikTok shop.
I got a fidget toy called Little Ouchies that's like pokey to play with. It's kind of fun.
Ooh. That's like a grounding thing. Like you squeeze it.
You grab it.
Very cool.
Well, life is a lot these days. How are you finding joy and staying sane amid the chaos?
Oh my gosh. I feel like I've just been trying to find corners of community, either in real life or online. I've been playing a lot of Mahjong. I learned how to play Filipino-style Mahjong. I'm Filipino. From my mom over the summer. I feel like she taught me selfishly so she could have more people to play with. My husband and I complete the table of four for her. Living in Los Angeles, of course, there are lots of different places to play Mahjong. I feel like Mahjong's having a moment. And we've been able to make friends through playing Mahjong, which is, I think, when you're mid to late 30s, hard to do. Just that, just being able to bond with new people over a central activity, being able to go out on during the week, which was unheard of for me, and play and get to know people. And even as an introvert who doesn't really like making small talk or starting conversation, being able to be that person just because it's like we're all united over this Mahjong table has been really refreshing. And then that also just leaning into art. I've been writing a lot of songs and I actually recorded a couple. So really trying to own being an artist again and creating in the madness has been helpful.
That's exciting. And note to self, I got to learn to play Mahjong and then find some Mahjong community around here in Rochester. That sounds really fun.
It's been great. And it's a lot easier to learn. I think when I was growing up, I was so intimidated by my aunts play every Sunday and they're so hardcore. I always called them like the varsity table because they're so hardcore that they don't want to teach anybody else. None of the kids learned. Once I actually learned, I was like, oh, this is way easier. And I feel like I can, you know, have conversation. I'm not a super competitive person or a board game person really, but being able to kind of make conversation with people while we're kind of like yapping and moving the tiles and it's been really nice.
I was going to say, can you beat your aunt someday? But it sounds like you're not going to be that competitive type.
I think my goal is to at least attempt to play with them next time I'm in town. I'm scared to do that. Like, gets me sweaty just even thinking about it.
You can do it.
I think I will. I'm going to try, I think, to at least sit at the table and see.
Well, happy yapping. Enjoy the Mahjong. Thank you so much for coming on today, Jackie. This was really fun to talk.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.